All right, here it is, the Monday version of our show. Well, you got through the weekend. I hope you had a nice one. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200. Hello, Wendy. Thanks for coming in today.
Hello, William.
Nice to see you. A mixed weekend. Would you agree? A lot of ugly stuff in the news. But you get through it.
You do get through it. Unfortunately, you're forced to get through it because it's happening a lot.
Yeah, there's that. There's that.
And you can't be afraid. You have to go on with your life, and it just turns out it can happen anywhere.
We know that it can happen anywhere, and there was a story I just read online an hour ago saying that these things are – we already knew this, but they're happening more frequently. They're happening not only at a higher rate, but they keep breaking their own records. You know, this was the largest shooting in a house of worship that has ever taken place in American soil.
I hate that we have to go through and label these things, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I know. So, yeah, if that was something you were following over the weekend, it was probably a very harsh weekend for you. And what will happen is what always happens is everybody will be incensed about it for a week and we'll move on and nothing will change. That's the sad truth, is everybody will say, we knew it's time for something to change, and we'll say it real loud, and we'll say it a lot for a couple of days, and then nothing will change.
But here's my question I always have. What can we do to help change this?
We cannot vote for the politicians that don't let change happen. You know, you gotta keep tabs on who's not letting change happen, who's being bought by the NRA, and say to yourself, well, if you want to continue to be bought by the NRA, you don't have my vote. Good luck finding another job. I guess that's all that can happen. It's not going to fix what happened over the weekend. It's not going to fix what's happened several times in the last couple of years. But I think that's our only move, is to figure out who's not letting change happen and not vote for them, I think.
Now, we will, of course, keep you updated on anything that comes over about the Sutherland Springs shooting in Texas at the church. Some things that I've been hearing about, too, is there was a guy who ran home. It was a very close-knit neighborhood and very close to where the church was. It's like the church was in the middle of a neighborhood.
Right.
He ran home and got his gun, and then he just grabbed some dude who had a pickup truck who was going to see his girlfriend and said, hey, can you give me a ride? Here's what happened in a nutshell. This guy came in the church, started shooting. Let's go follow him. He's in that car right there. Let's go. And this dude is just like, well, some guy just explained what happened, of course.
Right.
So they were in hot pursuit. A crash happened, and they were shooting at the guy as well. I feel like he helped save the day, and he went home and got his gun. So I don't know. And this guy who, the shooter, shouldn't have been able to legally obtain a gun.
Obviously, yeah.
He had, been discharged from the Air Force, had abuse charges against his wife and his child.
Right.
I mean, how did he get a gun legally?
But don't you think at this stage, if somebody wants to get a gun, legally or illegally,
right,
if they're going to do something as horrible as this,
they'll figure out a way to
get it. They're going to figure out a way to do it. There's just too many out there. There's too many ways to get them. We can quibble back and forth, and we've been quibbling back and forth forever about how to make it more difficult for somebody who has obvious problems to not get a gun. But then there's plenty of other stories about people who they managed to find a way to get a gun.
So how do we vote against people who support the NRA and legal gun owners, because these are not usually — this guy did get a gun legally. I don't know how that happened, but that's what I mean. I don't know what to do to make this go away.
There isn't any way to make it go away. There's just, there's a there's a lot of guns out there. So what do you do? I don't know. It's so random. Everybody always goes, well, you got to put more people, more people in charge, more cops in certain areas and stuff like this. This was a small town with absolutely no history of anything like this ever happening, ever. So how do you figure out? We got to have somebody watching over this. It's just too
random.
Maybe
we have to stop trying to stop the instant and start trying to prevent the instant.
Right.
And so
sure.
You had the president say today clearly, quickly, that this was a mental health issue. Okay, what are we going to do about
right.
that? Rather than just, because I think sometimes we say that as if we throw our hands up. Well, it's a mental health. We can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
Oh, we sure can.
And we absolutely can. I sat on a panel you know, at Sinai Hospital a couple weeks ago for AARP. And I'm going to mangle the statistic, but I'm going to give you the spirit of it. And what they said was that someone on the panel pointed out, they said, you know, when it comes to government spending on people in the United States, we tend to spend we spend about the same amount of money as we do, as Europeans do, governments do. But we spend ours at the end, at sort of the crises or incarceration or things like that, whereas in Europe...
Put a Band-Aid on it, you mean, Steve?
To fix the problem, whereas in Europe, they tend to spend earlier in children's lives and in people's lives.
Like a preemptive strike.
Yes, so that we're not dealt with these crises at the end of, and expensive situations at the end of life or in adulthood, the money is spent earlier to... grow people the right way. Now, again, I won't stand by the specifics of it, but that was the spirit of what that discussion was about. So if it, just because it's mental health, that does not mean there's not something we can do about it.
And my kids were diagnosed with ADHD in second grade. They've been to psychiatrists and therapists and anxiety and depression as well. And I spend a lot of money and have decent insurance. So I think about all these people that have no insurance. How do they get any mental help?
And those are all, you're only talking about the bracket of people that recognize that they need some sort of help.
True.
There's plenty of other people who go, no, I'll get through this on my own.
And this is so mild that there are people with major issues that just, they can't afford to get help.
Right.
So I don't know. Steve, what do I do to vote against the Band-Aid and vote for the preemptive strike? I mean, that's what I mean. And
well, the problem is, too, what I'm kind of talking about, I think, is that it's a long-term solution. It's not going to stop the next one, but maybe it will start to slow them down over a period of time. I mean, I think that's maybe my point, is that we're taking this sort of instant, you know, how do we stop this one in the church rather than the long view of things? To change things the way we do things in the long term.
Then some changes have to be made, and we have to see them beginning to change. I don't see that.
Remember how, now, as I tell you the story, I'm not a gun person, so I don't know what exactly these things are called. But the gunman in Las Vegas was able to fashion something for his guns to make
the gun stock.
The gun stock, to make it shoot repetitively so that it wouldn't stop shooting.
Turns a semi-automatic into an automatic.
Right. So immediately after this happened, everybody said for the next couple of days, well, that we look at that. We need to change that today.
Even the NRA.
Yes. So here we are four or five weeks later where there's been not only no change in it, but it's old news.
People voted to not get rid of them, to not ban them, which how do you explain that?
You can't explain it. There's no explanation for it at all.
And so much misinformation is coming out. When this was happening over the weekend, I went on Facebook and I saw a fake Facebook page of the shooter. BuzzFeed put together a bunch of things that were incorrect as it was breaking. Following the shooting at First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs, Texas Representative Vicente Gonzalez of Texas incorrectly stated that the gunman was a man named Sam Hyde. There's a history with this Sam Hyde. It's like a goof name that people that are fans of this guy, anything that happens, they just post on their Facebook page, the shooter was Sam Hyde.
What's the goal in that?
It's unclear how Gonzalez heard that Hyde was the alleged shooter, but a barrage of social media posts, often originating from users of 4chan, which I don't know what that is, if it's a website or what have you, often flood Twitter naming Hyde as the shooter. So it's a hoax, and it happens a lot.
Why would they do that? I don't understand what they get
out of it.
It's
like the Baba Booey kind of thing, you know, where you're just getting a name out there. So there have been numerous reports that this Sam Hyde has been named as a suspect in numerous cases. It's like a hoax. Why is somebody doing a hoax when people have been shot and killed?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
There's another YouTuber known as Review Bra. He claimed somebody posted something and said, my brother was in Sutherland Springs today and is not responding. Please be on the lookout for him. He's not a missing person. Review Bra, the man behind the popular YouTube channel, The Report of the Week, was also recently falsely claimed as missing after the October shooting in Las Vegas that left 58 people dead. So popular was another hoax that review bra was missing after the attack at an Ariana Grande concert in England. So then the YouTuber was compelled to release a video titled "I Am Alive." So these are hoaxes played off of real tragedies, and that to me is sickening.
Yeah, I don't understand why anyone would do that. But all right, let's do this. We've got a lot of calls. We're 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. What do we do? It's another one. They just keep piling up and piling up. Is there some answer to this? Is there some way out of this? Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We were talking about all the misinformation that comes out there. They're hoaxes, and it just sickens me that someone would use this opportunity to further their recognition on the internet. I had talked about something called 4chan, which I looked up. It's an English language image board website, so it's like a community of people that just post things, goofy memes, and they are the people that got the information out there that it was a guy named, I don't remember the name I said.
Sam
Hyde.
Yeah.
And so a representative from Texas actually said, it appears this is, you know, the shooter has been identified as. I mean, this just kills me that people are playing around when these really tragic things are happening.
All right. So the next step is they try to figure out a motive for this. And whether or not they find out a motive for this, it doesn't really help.
They did sort of, Steve, I don't know if you reported this earlier, but his in-laws belonged to this church.
Right, exactly.
But they weren't there.
They weren't at the service yesterday. I think they went to the church after the shooting yesterday afternoon.
But, do we know if he knew they weren't going to be at the church? It seems like there's a pretty strong connection there.
Yeah.
That his in-laws, could have been targeting them because their daughter was the one who helped get these charges pressed against him. So there's
a revenge factor, but
yeah.
But still, it's another one of those cases where people are in the wrong place at the wrong time. No matter where it happens, it's the wrong place, but a church.
It
you
should
think.
Not be a church or schools.
Right.
Although, go on. Shouldn't be at concerts. It shouldn't be at malls.
Shouldn't be anywhere. Right. But nobody wants to do anything about it. We can all be shocked by it, but in the end, there's just no change. As awful as that is, there's just never any change.
Let's talk to Dan, Bill. Put your seatbelt on. All right. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
What do you think, Dan?
I really believe we need more money for mental health, but I also believe we should have more trained people with guns in everywhere. Churches. Have you ever seen a mass shooting in a police station?
There has never been a mass shooting in a police station that I know of.
Because there are people there with guns that have been trained, is what you're saying.
But how, you can't have cops. How do you put them everywhere?
I'm talking citizens that they're trained. I'm a concealed carry person. I had to go to train to use my gun. Have you ever heard of a concealed person going killing people? No. If you know how to carry a gun, it's not going to be a toy. You're going to keep it just for safety.
I don't have a gun. I don't agree with having a gun, but I don't disagree with people having them if they do it the right way. Again, none of these mass shootings have been committed by a law-abiding gun owner.
I understand it, but now if there would have been a law-abiding gun owner in that church, there'd be less people dead. Am I right or wrong?
I don't know. I don't know that you're right. I don't know that you're wrong. But I don't want to, have people die in crossfire. Who's going to be the one to pull out their gun and take the shooter down? What if 5-10 people pull out a gun and try and shoot the shooter and more people get shot in crossfire?
Well, I agree with you. That's why if you're trained, you know where to shoot. You don't just shoot randomly into the air.
What if there's a guy at the front of the altar and a guy at the back and they're both shooting towards each other to get the guy in the middle? Then what happens?
Okay, usually if the guy's got an automatic weapon, he doesn't belong there. I'm talking about a concealed handgun on you. So this guy's got an automatic weapon. You know who he is. Am I right or am I wrong? I mean,
I got to be honest, as much as I love Quentin Tarantino movies, I don't want my life to be one. I don't want everywhere I go to know that everybody around me has a gun and anyone could just break out in shots at any time. I can't live that life.
Okay.
Have you fired your gun?
Dan, Steve Bertrand has a question for you.
Dan, have you fired your gun in a moment of peril or emergency?
No.
Okay.
But I did,
thank God.
I did show her one time when I thought I was going to happen. Something was going to happen.
I mean, I hope your training was great and you're equipped for that moment. But all the training in the world wouldn't prepare me for actually pulling a gun.
Let's be honest. Does anybody really know if you could actually shoot another human being? You don't know if that second comes. But I'd rather have an opportunity to save my family or somebody around me than stand there and say, you know what, no gun zone, please don't shoot me. Or the guy see the sign, oh, I can't go in there, there's no gun zone. This is church. These poor people, they don't care. They like the recognition. People talk about it, talk about it, talk about it.
I get that, Dan, that you want to protect your family. And if you were in that church and you saw a guy with an automatic weapon, the first thing you would think of is to save your family and you'd...
Yes.
Try and take them down. But what if there's 10 people doing that? Do you call it like you do a baseball when you're on the field? Like, I got this one. I mean, how do you know who's to do it?
You know what? You got a better chance with a gun to defend yourself. If I don't care if there's six of them. You got a one in six chance of saving somebody's life. Cold War, Russia, United States. It was like two people holding guns to their head. We wouldn't shoot each other because if we shot Russia, they'd kill us. Same thing. You got two people holding guns against. Nobody's going to shoot because both of you are going to die. Am I right or am I wrong?
I don't think this person cared that he was going to die. I think he almost assumed he was going to die.
I don't think he's going to die. But you got innocent people being killed because there was, oh, no, you can't have a gun in here. You know what? Guns don't kill people. Take bullets away. Well, the bullet and the gun, you need both of them to kill, do something.
You're right. Dan,
you have a gun and you point it.
I appreciate your point.
Gun, well, except, wait a minute. The gun yesterday did a pretty good job of killing a lot of people.
Anytime I hear that phrase, guns don't kill people, I always go,
well,
I think they do.
Saying, you know what they do, but you got to have two things together. You got to have the bullets, the gun, and the nut. All right? A gun by itself is not going to shoot. I put my gun on the sidewalk. It's not going to shoot anybody.
But the potential for danger, if there's a gun, the potential for danger is automatically there. It's just part of there being a gun.
There's a potential for danger when you cross the streets and not with a truck.
No, there is. I agree with you.
Somebody's going to blow you up. I mean, you could die. There's a potential. You've got to at least have a chance, a fighting chance to save yourself.
Well, I would like to eliminate the problem so we don't need to protect ourselves. I would like to be able to go to church and worship and not have to worry about a gunfight breaking out.
And these are all good people, and they're praying to God.
I know. I feel terrible.
People, God bless them. I feel terrible for them. You know, I go to church every Sunday, you know, and I got my gun on me in church. I don't care. The sign says, don't do it.
You bring a gun to church? Do you?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I bring my gun everywhere I go. Anywhere. You know those signs you guys got? You know, no guns allowed?
Yeah.
Nobody knows I got it on me because I don't wave it.
Okay, so what happens if they find a gun on you? Do you get a ticket? Do you get arrested? What happens?
I lose my concealed carry permit.
Well, why aren't people checking a no-gun place to see if people have guns?
Because they think that's going to save them. Like the politician says, if you go in the wrong place, you got to leave your gun in the car. Everybody knows, break in the car, you got a gun.
Yeah,
your
that's
gun's
true.
Gone.
There seems to be many problems here. Dan, we've got a break and hit news, but we appreciate you calling. We really do.
Have a good day.
Bless you.
Thanks,
I hope
Dan.
You don't ever have to shoot anyone. But see, there are so many problems on both sides of it.
I know.
We are in crazy town. Welcome to it.
All right, let's take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's plenty more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Country Financial has put together a program called Journey to Success, which highlights various nonprofit charities. The past couple of weeks, we've learned a lot about Chicago Commons. And with us today is Ron Kaminsky. Now, Ron, you are CEO, principal, and founder of HBK Engineering, LLC. How are you?
I am, and thank you very much for having me.
And you are also a board member on Chicago Commons.
I am a very proud board member, and on behalf of the entire Chicago Commons family and organization, thank you for this. It's a great opportunity.
Okay, we've learned about Chicago Commons, and basically it's an important nonprofit organization that helps early childhood and seniors in areas where they may not be able to receive help. Is that the gist of it?
That's correct. For now, 123 years now, We've been following the model of supporting families in the most under-resourced neighborhoods of the city of Chicago. And they continue that today with impacting over 3,000 families annually and employing over 800 individuals.
That's tremendous. What hooked you? What did you know about them or hear that said we got to get involved with this?
You know, I was very fortunate that one of our largest clients is People's Gas here in Chicago. And through one of their fundraising events and taking part of that, it was good timing for me that I was looking for another not-for-profit board to get involved with. Early childhood education was something that I was hoping.
Yeah.
And as soon as I started to learn about it, learned about the history, and then when you visit the facilities, it just impacts you. You're going into, I think you have a vision of where, with because of these neighborhoods are so under-resourced right now, and you had a vision going there of what it was going to be like, and then you walk into their facilities, and the quality of care is to the moon. It's unbelievable. It looks like any top-notch private school that you'll run into anywhere in the United States of what they're doing there and what they're accomplishing. So it was the early childhood education. I knew I was hooked. And then when I saw what they were doing and working with families in the community and bringing them all together and bringing in the education process for those families involved. And then it was what really caught me off guard in the positive way is what I saw that they were doing for seniors that are in these neighborhoods. And what I just was not prepared for, and then what I saw that they were doing is that to be a senior in some of these neighborhoods with the families that are already so taxed with regards to taking care of extended families, these seniors are in some really difficult spots. And I think that all of us know what it's like today for any of us to work and to take care of seniors. And so what they're doing is just unbelievable work. And so I was hooked, and I've been involved with the board now probably for about 6 years.
Great.
We're all at that age where our parents are senior citizens. My parents are no longer with us, but I see my friends going through this as their parents age, they need special help, special assistance, and boy, is it expensive. So I can't even imagine someone in some of these neighborhoods how they could help other than Chicago Commons.
You hit it right on the spot. That's exactly right. And what people don't realize is that 90% of seniors want to live in their communities. You know, they don't want to leave. They don't want to leave their homes. And you know, to go and make the move to a nursing home is a very emotional step. And so with Chicago Commons, what they can do is that they can ensure that they can have a self of sufficiency. And with our at-home daycare, at-home senior care that we provide, it does just that.
All right. So you are CEO, principal, and founder of HBK Engineering, also on the board of Chicago Commons. How does HBK support Chicago Commons?
Well, that's something that we're really, really excited to talk about, and it's something that we can hope that other companies can get involved with it. There's a number of different ways. And what we'll do, first of all, as mentioned, is to get involved with board work. I think so many not-for-profits benefit for that. So any organizations that can continue and help those to be able to be more active within not-for-profit boards. We take part in the school, in getting ready for school supply drive. That's something that's really exciting, and we can get a number of our professionals in our organization to get involved with that. It's very exciting. You could take part in playground cleanups we've done, gardening, helping out to participate, prepare. Oh, this is key. Getting our HR staff to be able to help with and prepare individuals for interviewing processes. Mm-hmm. These are things
that
big companies can do to be able to help. And then obviously to support the things that are fun to support with regards to the fundraising events. And we have two major events that you can find on our website. One involves a great day of golf that raises a lot of money. And the other we just had is our Pour Your Heart Out for Commons is a great fundraising event with a lot of fun.
HBK Engineering, of course, giving to Chicago Commons. How can we give? How can we help? And what if someone's listening right now who needs assistance in the use of Chicago Commons?
Well, first of all, the first place to go is we have a wonderful website, and that's www.chicagocommons.org. And then through social media, it's at Chicago Commons. And you'll find a lot of great spots on there that you can find. And you know, obviously, reach out to anyone that you see on there.
All right, I feel like this is a weird Maury Povich show or something because we have a special guest that we would like to bring in. Country Financial has been part of our conversation because they help fund what Chicago Commons does. And with us right now is Mike Fisher, VP of Community Development for Country Financial. And I believe, Mike, you have a little something that you would like to talk to Ron about.
Absolutely. And Ron, it's a delight to see you. Actually, I saw you Friday at the Pour Your Heart Out event. It was a great event. Yeah. But, you know, we have certainly developed a great partnership with your organization. We've been delighted to support you and the work that you do. And in fact, we really appreciate the fact that you've been doing this work for over 100 years. You've been helping to empower individuals and families and communities to overcome poverty. And that's certainly a space that's near and dear to our hearts. We certainly agree that it is important to help families achieve financial security and really to help them just take those simple steps to actually get started on the road. And so we appreciate the work that you're doing, and we want to help you continue to do that work and empower these families and communities. And so we'd like to make a special contribution today of $10,000.
Oh, doggy.
He should give me a warning for this. My gosh, well, thank you. So that is so generous. And I can tell you on behalf of the entire organization and everyone working so hard and all the families and children, thank you so much.
This is a lovely little
very
moment.
Very nice, Mike. That's great news. You know, great news.
And that's something that I could add is that in being on the inside and seeing how things are run inside Chicago Commons, of how they treat every dollar that comes in, and the return on that investment is another place and is where it should be. And this is going to be a huge impact. And thank you so much.
Oh, we're delighted to do it.
Very 10,000
nice.
Big ones.
Very, very nice.
Phil, you didn't do your typical where do you cash that? You can't put it in an ATM.
No, I didn't do it this time.
You won't be able to fit this in his wallet, I don't think.
You can try, but
I will
fit.
Make sure that that gets back safely to Chicago Commons, and thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Mike Fisher, again, the Vice President of Community Development over at Country Financial, and Ron Kaminsky, CEO, Principal Founder of HPK Engineering, LLC. Gentlemen, this is a good thing for everybody. Thank you so much for participating. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to Country Financial, your Journey to Success program is quite a success.
It has been a great program, and we're delighted to have them be a part of it.
Ron, you had closing comments. You just got handed a $10,000 check. I bet you do have some.
I can tell you, I'm just thinking about being here to represent 800 employees and 3,000 families that are being impacted, that I just wanted to say thank you from all of them. To you, and what a privilege it is for me to be able to represent the organization today. And thank you both so much for having us.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break, then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. An interesting turn of events over the weekend that we thought we would discuss.
Yeah, I told you what I was going to talk about, but I don't get the connection.
This band, of course, Badfinger, and somebody flipped off the president's motorcade.
Oh, yeah. Good
There's
one,
their
Bill.
Tie-in. Thank you.
It was the middle finger salute seen around the world, Bill. Julie Briskman's protest aimed at the presidential motorcade that roared past her while she was on her usual cycling path in Northern Virginia last month became an instantly viral photo. She's a 50-year-old marketing executive. And she's the mother of two, and she was just riding her bike like she always does, and a motorcade came by,
yeah.
President Trump's, and she did the single finger salute.
Yes.
Well, someone took a picture of that, someone in the press, someone, and this photo went viral.
Mm-hmm.
On Halloween, after Briskman gave her bosses a government contracting firm, by the way, that's where she's employed.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. She decided to give them a heads up that she might have gone viral. She was actually the unidentified cyclist in the photo that was seen around the world.
Oh, wait. So in none of the pictures did it identify her by name?
No, she came forward.
Oh, she did. Interesting.
She came forward. Yeah. And when she did on Halloween, just to say, hey, HR, a little something I think,
right.
A little something I should tell you.
A little surprise.
They took her into a room and fired her.
Oh, no. Immediately?
Immediately.
Oh, no.
They did give her a box
to
get her thing.
That's better.
She says, again, this is Julie Briskman. I wasn't even at work when I did that, but they told me I violated the code of conduct policy.
Now, is this because there's some tie-in with a government agency, with a government contract? Like, if she worked a more private job and had done this.
Like at Starbucks or something.
Let's say she worked at Starbucks. Would they still be so quick to take action and fire her?
I don't know that she should be fired. And if I was her, I would get an attorney.
I don't think she should be fired for this.
The company is Akima LLC. It's a government contracting firm. Her bosses at Akima have not returned emails and calls. This is from the Washington Post, by the way. Have not returned emails or calls requesting comment. They showed her the blue highlighted section 4.3 of their social media policy when they fired her.
Yeah. And that's just saying you got to behave yourself.
Well, here's what it says. Oh, okay. This is section 4.3. Excuse me, 4.3. Here's what it says. Covered social media activity that contains discriminatory, obscene, malicious, or threatening content is knowingly false, create a hostile work environment, or similar inappropriate or unlawful conduct will not be tolerated and will be subject to discipline up to and including termination of employment.
All right.
I still don't think it's right.
Well, my guess is more and more companies have a clause like that in your contract saying you have to perform up to community standards. And if you don't, and they're usually pretty vague. I know I have one in my contract here, and I'm guessing you do, too.
No, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, really? That's not bad.
Well, if you make the company look bad, but here's the thing. Briskman wasn't wearing anything that connected her to the company when she was on her ride. She didn't do a selfie. Someone else took a picture
right.
of this.
Right.
There's nothing on her personal social media accounts mm-hmm. where she wordlessly posted the photo without identifying herself. Mm-hmm. So this picture was going viral. She just kind of retweeted it or reposted it.
Right.
But she didn't say, hey, that's me. She just figured, you know what, I better come clean with my company now that this is going viral. And because Briskman was in charge of the firm's social media presence during her six-month tenure there, she recently flagged something that did link her company to some pretty ugly stuff. As she was monitoring Facebook this summer, she found a public comment by a senior director at the company and an otherwise civil discussion by one of his employees about Black Lives Matter. And she, all right, there was a thing that was posted, you're a blank, blank, the director injected using his profile that clearly and repeatedly identifies himself as an employee of that firm. So she helped, she flagged that and said, hey, you know, we shouldn't be doing this on social media.
All right. And then she herself got involved.
Yeah, but she wasn't named. She could, like, I could have just said that was me riding my bike.
But the mere fact that she came to them saying, let's get ahead of this, I could be implicated in this. This girl is me in this picture. If it's a company that deals with, and I hate to defend the company here because I think part of freedom of speech is if somebody's passing by and it happens to be the presidential motorcade and you want to flip them off, as disrespectful as it is, I understand
that.
Isn't
that your right to do that?
I think it is your right to do that. But if you're the company, you go, well, at this point, you're representing us. We deal with this government that you're flipping off. So you put us in a weird place.
Well, I give her props for coming clean and coming forward.
Right.
But I think in the case of this situation and how it turned out, if you do something wrong, don't ever come forward.
Never come forward.
Don't identify
Blame
yourself.
Blame somebody else.
Have you? I got to be honest with you. I didn't see this picture. It's kind of ringing a bell now.
She's just riding a bicycle next to the motorcade and flipping off the motorcade, the presidential motorcade.
Is she doing it the right way where it's just the middle finger?
Yeah.
Because I don't like when people like hold down their first and third finger.
Yeah,
just
you do it the right way. Go to school, get a class in, and learn how to do it.
Julie Briskman is no longer employed, and I'm sure she'll find a job somewhere else.
Right. Probably at that company that makes the foam hands with the number one. She'll probably get some sort of job with them. Let's take a quick break. We've got news next, and then there's a lot more on today's show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. We're easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. I want to read a text to you that came in the last segment. We're going to move on to something else, but I just thought that this text was pretty important. We just told you about this woman who was riding her bicycle and flipped off the presidential motorcade mm-hmm. containing the President of the United States.
Julie Briskman.
Yes. Yes. So we told you that she has been relieved of her duties. She worked for a company that had some government contracts. They have a codicil in their agreement with her saying that if you do anything immoral or obscene, they have the right to terminate you. And they would and did. They got rid of her right after she took a picture, or somebody took a picture of her flipping off the president and his motorcade. So here is the text. This is from 847. I'm sorry, 815. To all you President Trump-hating WGN DJs, that's us, I guess.
Spinning the tunes.
Did you hear the word obscene in the company code? I did.
It's obscene.
It's obscene. Flipping someone off is considered obscene. Agreed. If that were Hillary, all of you would be outraged. Disagree.
I would not at all.
I would not be outraged at all.
We all have the right to flip someone off.
Right. Right.
I don't take that as a threat.
Not only that, but if you have this conversation with anybody about Donald Trump and the thoughts about him being president, it's almost impossible for the person to not bring up Hillary Clinton. I would love to have this discussion with somebody once where they didn't use the words, what about Hillary?
She didn't win.
She is not the president.
So who cares?
Right.
Yeah, but you see why this woman could be fired, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't.
I do.
Really don't. We really studied this picture. There's no way somebody could have recognized her.
It would have been very difficult to identify her. Her back is toward the camera. She's riding a very nondescript bike.
Baseball cap, ponytail. You can't see her face.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not if they figured it out. I mean, once they figured out who it was, she's responsible for her job and what she did. I mean,
but she wasn't posing for a selfie. You know what I mean? If she took the picture, to me, that you run the risk. But going through your everyday life, if, you know, maybe she just was flipping off the motorcade because they got too close to her as she was on her bike.
Yeah, maybe that was it. I can't believe her bike, that she was allowed to get that close on her bike.
All right. I know.
I know. That was
I
a
agree.
Shock, too. It was.
Steve, have you ever flipped someone off while driving?
No.
Okay, let's be honest.
I don't think so. I don't do, I mean.
I don't anymore because I'm afraid I'm going to get shot, but in the past I used to. What if I'm behind you, you flip somebody off, I take a picture of you and turn it into Todd Manley. Should you be fired for that? You're in your own car, in your own business, on your own time.
If I was flipping off Todd Manley and you took a picture of me, that's kind of, in a way, what we're talking about here, right? She works for a company that does government business.
And could directly affect their business. If somebody put the pieces together and went, we're spending money with you, this company, and this company is represented by this woman who's flipping off the president. I understand that.
I mean, I'm not saying she should have been. I certainly understand why they did it, and especially if it said it in their, you know, in their agreement.
Section 4.6.
My favorite sign over the weekend, though, was when the president arrived in Hawaii and the people said, "Welcome to Kenya."
They should be fired.
A couple of years ago at the Pride Parade, I was with Kathy and Judy. And it's not important who participated in this, but it was Kathy.
It was Kathy. It was
we
Kathy.
All know.
All right.
I don't even know where the story's
at. I know,
along,
me too.
But you know it was Kathy. So along the parade route is a group of people protesting very loudly the Pride Parade, furious that such a thing exists, holding up signs that are just really just cruel, you know? And Kathy said, boy, I see something like that. I want to flip those people off. I go, do it. She goes, I'm not going to do it by myself. I go, well, then I will do it with you.
Are you on the float?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a problem there.
So as we're passing by and they're saying awful things about the people participating in the Pride Parade, she and I are flipping off these people.
Get Todd Manley on the phone. Said, I think you should be fired.
She said, which paper do you think this will be in, the Tribune or the Sun-Times? I go, I would imagine both. And she goes, you going to stop? I go, no, uh-uh. And we kept doing it.
Okay, but that's even worse because you're on a float representing the station. This is a woman just riding her bike on a weekend.
Right. No, I understand that. But isn't part of being in this country the right to say, here's something I don't agree with? Those protesters that day had every right to put those signs up and say nasty things, but we had the right to counteract them.
And your employer has a right to fire you for showing a bad look for WGN Radio.
They could.
Kathy's already not here.
Right. I know.
Jasmine, get Todd on the phone, or Stephanie Menendez, stat.
Do it. So I understand anybody's right to hold up a middle finger and say, I don't agree with what you're doing. I don't agree with what you stand for. So that's their stance. But I do understand, I hate to say it, but I do understand the company saying, now, if I'm the company, I throw a warning her way and say, this is the kind of thing that you cannot continue to do, right?
Yeah, and again, had she not identified herself, no one would know that she works for that company.
Right, true.
So I would almost say, all right, I appreciate your honesty.
Right.
But
from here on in,
you
say,
can't do anything
that
like
lady
that
in the
again.
Picture is Barb. I would blame somebody else. I go, you know Barb in accounting? She told me she was going to do this, and there she is. Get Barb.
All right, but you just said you agree with, you know, that you have a right to flip people off, but you also agree with the company being able to fire you for that. Seriously, you were on the WGN float. Why did you just reveal that?
I just think that the mere fact that we had a presence there said that we agree with the whole thing, that we're on board with Pride.
So you didn't have to flip them off. They understood that you're for it.
It was more effective this way. It was.
I want to mention something real quickly. There's an event that takes place Veterans Day weekend, and it has been taking place for several years. It's Outreach Feed Six. It's a company that has partnered with the Northern Illinois Food Bank and the Chicago Wolves ice hockey team. It's a meal packaging event, and it's the largest one yet in the Chicagoland area. We were going to have Bill Kanatis on the line to talk about it because it's happening this weekend at the Chicago Wolves Allstate Arena in the Skyline Room Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. But here's, I guess, good news, bad news. The good news is the event is sold out. The bad news is Bill Kanatis doesn't get to go on the air and talk about it. So you don't have to show up and help pack food, but Hunger Heroes, if you'd like to donate, we'll put a website up on our Facebook page. It's feed6, so feed6.org/hungerheroes. Right. And if you'd like to donate money, please feel free to do so.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, Larry David got into some hot water on Saturday Night Live. Some people say his monologue was insensitive.
How about unfunny?
You could also say it was unfunny. We'll play, if you didn't hear it, we'll play you a little bit of the monologue, the part that is under the most scrutiny, and we'll figure out whether or not what he said was a good thing or a bad thing. It's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
That's nice. We do things as a team, Bill.
Yeah. Get fired together. Larry David of Curb Your Enthusiasm
is a bitter, bitter man, isn't he?
No, I don't know. Is he?
If you watch Curb, he just seems like, you know, he is entitled to everything
easily,
and gets nothing.
Easily riled, right? All right, so he was the host of Saturday Night Live. He's got some history with the show. He was a writer for a very short time.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He was a writer who quit one night and then realized what he had done and then just kept showing up for work after he had quit because his theory was they'll forget that I quit. But they didn't forget. They reminded him. Remember when you quit? You can't come here anymore. We're not going to pay you anymore.
He is such a goof.
Yeah. All right. So he was the host of Saturday Night Live on Saturday. And because he's a stand-up comic, he did some opening jokes. He did a monologue at the beginning, some of which made people very uneasy, very unhappy.
Can I just say something? I know that he was responsible for Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. And kind of George was based on him, sort of. Okay.
Yeah.
I never knew he was a stand-up comic until just now you said that.
Yeah, he's done some stand-up over the years. The very first episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, before they decided to make it into a series, was him going back to do stand-up after years and years of not doing stand-up, because he had just been a TV writer and producer. So that very first one was just him, what do I need to do to prepare myself to be a stand-up again?
Oh, I just thought it was part of the show. I didn't know it was autobiographical.
He's a pretty good stand-up. However, on Sunday night, he tackled some very difficult. On Saturday night, he tackled some very difficult subjects, to not much success, I don't think. Do you?
No, and I love this guy.
I love him too.
He looks like a turtle or meets a bald eagle. I don't know which it is. He makes me laugh. He's quirky.
Yeah.
I think he's very talented.
Right.
I was looking forward to his SNL appearance, and I was left wanting more.
Yeah. I don't know that you could call that bit successful in the very opening. He talked about Quasimodo for a little while. He talked about working for a blind person for a while and how easy it is to take advantage of a blind person. And then he tackled that one topic that every comedian at some point tackles. How would I pick up women in a concentration camp? Here's that from Saturday. Listen.
You know, I've always been obsessed with women, and I've often wondered if I'd grown up in Poland when Hitler came to power and was sent to a concentration camp, would I still be checking out women in the camp? I, think I would, you know? Hey, Shlomo, Shlomo, look at that one over there by Barrett's 8. Oh, my God, is she gorgeous? Oh, I've had my eye on her for weeks. Yeah, I'd like to go up and say something to her. Of course, the problem is there are no good opening lines in a concentration camp. How's it going? They treating you okay? You know, if we ever get out of here, I'd love to take you out for some latkes. You like latkes? What? What'd I say? Is it me or is it the whole thing? It's because I'm bald, isn't it?
You know, watching it and listening to it again, no laughter from me, and my stomach feels like I have butterflies in my stomach or something.
It's a little tense, isn't it? And even if, I don't know if you were focused at all on the band while he was doing this.
Yes.
The way Saturday Night Live hooks up that shot is whoever's doing the monologue is front and center, and you can always see three or sometimes four band members behind them, usually laughing even more than you would imagine.
Yep.
Because they're the guys in the band, and they tend to enjoy that opening monologue. There was one guy, upper left-hand corner, who didn't crack a smile, who seemed very uneasy all throughout the monologue. I was watching it, and I was uneasy. I give him points for tackling something that you shouldn't talk about because it shouldn't be funny. Concentration camps should not be funny. They're not, right? I give him points for trying something. I wish so badly it was funnier. It just wasn't that funny. You know, if you're gonna jump like that, you hope it's worth it, and I don't know if it was
worth it.
Was it?
And he did mention Harvey Weinstein, and that as the sexual harassment suits are coming out, he noticed one common denominator. They were all Jewish.
Right.
I don't know why.
Many of them were.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
all of them,
I'm
but
sorry.
Many of them were.
And that made me uncomfortable, too, because it's like, I know Harvey Weinstein is material now, but it's not funny to me.
Right.
That's not funny to me either.
Right.
And so that was like, wow, I'm not laughing at this. And then this Holocaust bit came, which the concentration camp, rather. It just...
Here's what I was trying to figure out. And I did stand up for 10 years.
And
so
we're very
I was,
good at
oh,
it.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you. But I was always trying to figure out who has the right to say or do something on stage. For instance, people have always said, you know, the N-word has been a constant source of debate, right? Is anyone allowed to use it? If anyone is allowed to use it, should it only be African Americans? And I think to some extent, concentration camps or things like that, if anyone is going to do it, I guess you have to give a nod to somebody like Larry David, I guess, who is Jewish. I guess it didn't make it any less or more uncomfortable for me.
It doesn't. I think that's something that really should not be poked fun at, and regardless of your religion.
I want to agree with you, and yet, for some reason, Springtime for Hitler and the Producers is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a movie. It just is. And the first time, now, I was too young to see it in theaters when it first came out, but I know from secondhand accounts of my own parents who saw it in a predominantly Jewish theater, in a Jewish neighborhood, in a predominantly Jewish area, where they said it was Jewish people laughing the hardest and loudest at this, my dad included, you know. By rights, that should not be funny, but it really is.
But that wasn't focused just on concentration camps, wasn't it?
Hitler.
About Hitler's life? And I never saw it, so.
This particular thing is it's about a musical about Adolf Hitler, which, again, you just when you look at that on paper, you go, oh, don't.
Right.
Please, please don't. But somehow, for some reason, it worked just because of the audacity of it all. The fact that there's like June Taylor type dancers on a stage singing and dancing to a song called Springtime for Hitler. It's just so absurd and so forbidden and taboo that you go, well, they pulled it off that time. I didn't think Larry David pulled it off on Saturday. I wish he did because I love him, but it wasn't worth it.
And you know, you hear the word concentration camp and your mind goes somewhere
immediately.
And you don't think of hitting on women there.
Right. But then you could say, but that was his path.
Yeah,
that, you know,
I
is
guess.
To take something that was so untalked about. Larry David used to do this thing, and I think he does it in that very first episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where it's about Hitler and magicians. Did you ever see him do this?
I don't remember that.
I don't want to use the wrong words to describe it, but he talks about a thing about how Adolf Hitler had a love of magicians, and that's all you need to know. I mean, once you see it, if you want to Google it, you can find it. But again, anything having to do with Adolf Hitler, you go, I don't know how you're going to make that funny. That's tough to make that funny. Sometimes it is. I don't know why it is. It just is. Springtime for Hitler is a perfect example. If anyone's ever seen the Broadway play or seen
the
movie.
Is it the producers? Is that
producers.
What
that's? Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know there was a play called that. That's why I was confused.
Within the play and movie, The Producers, is a musical called Springtime for Hitler.
Got it.
Yeah.
And that's funny.
They make it to lose money. They come up with what they hope is the worst idea for a Broadway show ever because they need to lose money. They have too many investors, but it turns out it's a huge hit. So
that's a funny concept.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I was shocked.
It was shocking, but he knew it. I mean, Larry David's one of those guys.
And to push the envelope.
Yeah. And they've had, Saturday Night Live loves to do that. And, you know, you book a comedian like Louis C.K. or Sarah Silverman or whoever. Dave Chappelle. You book them because you want them to go up and not be safe. You want them to be talked about.
But you want them to be funny.
That's what was lacking, I think, on Saturday, right? If it was funnier, I don't know. I guess if you're the Anti-Defamation League, you're still upset about this because it shouldn't be fodder for potential hysterics.
But had he delivered, I think
most people would have just said he was up there trying to be funny and he was funny. Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got news and then there's more show. Eric Zorn's going to stop by in a little while from the Tribune. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
All hail King Zorn.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. You know that theme song of mine?
Yes.
It's from an old TV show. It's now an old TV show, an old Fox TV show. And I think over the years, as we keep playing it, it's just going to be like, oh, that's his theme song.
Right.
That's his walk-up music.
So. You know how Bob Hopes was Thanks for the Memories?
Right.
You know,
this
it
is
just
a lot
became
better
synonymous.
Than that.
Right. This is way better. The name Hope was not in his song.
And it didn't talk about how great he was.
No. This is far better.
I really
better.
Like it. Anyway.
All right. A couple of things. Number one, we did Halloween tweets with you just prior to Halloween, but now October has come and gone. So it's the top October
tweets.
These
are the top October tweets. These are not related to Halloween. None of them are related to Halloween.
All right.
Because I did that last week.
Separate.
And it's on your podcast feed if anyone wants to go back and enjoy those.
Thank you for reminding us.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, here are the top 10 tweets. Okay, and again, as usual, this is going to be on your Bill and Wendy's Facebook page with the attribution.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down the pace of the comedy. You know, be like when you were doing stand-up, if you had to attribute all the jokes you stole.
It would have taken forever.
You would have taken a really long time.
And that is funny because Bill never stole a joke in his life.
No, I stole from Rosemarie.
Only the... Well, she wrote for you.
Her hair,
she, she and Buddy wrote for you.
Yeah, they did. I thought they did.
Anyway, I finally have the body I want after a rigorous 6-month program of lowering my expectations. In France, they call all kissing not French kissing, except French kissing, which they just call kissing.
Oh, that's
I
funny.
Like that.
There you go. Now, here's one. Do gay people say straight men look a little heavy in the loafers?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Sort of.
This is a bit of a visual tweet, but you have to. Anyway. Are news anchors secretly insulting you? More on this story at 11. Moron.
Well, somebody, who was it who had a segment called Moron Sports? And I always thought that has to be intentional. So, but one of the local news things, whenever they would do their sports thing, they would start with the big stories and then they'd come back with a segment called Moron Sports.
Was it Jan Greco?
I don't know who it was, but I always went, there's no way that's accidental.
And the word moron, of course, has currency these days.
Yes, it does.
Because of Rex Tillerson and what he allegedly called the president.
Yep.
Sure, I'm curious about the 42 voicemails on my phone, but not listen to my voicemails curious. Do you guys do this? Do you
let them pile up a little bit?
I got to tell you, I'm proud of myself. I showed Bill this. I had 80,000 emails on my phone.
No exaggeration.
I swear
not
to
exaggerating.
God, tell them how many are
on
there
now. You're down to just 9,600, 9,600, but there were over 80,000 on Wendy's.
I just don't go through and purge, but Gmail has made it easy where there's a little tab up at the top when you sign on to your account, and it'll say promotional stuff.
Yes.
And so I deleted like 47,000 emails that way. Almost my computer was smoking as I tried to delete all of them at one time. But I just saw voicemails now. You can read what they say. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you don't have to listen to them.
Yeah, I think voicemail is just, it's like a fax, you know. It's like one of these things that, and in my, I know my voicemail at the Tribune, and I know Mary Schmeek's voicemail, they all say, like, if you must leave a voicemail, you can leave it here, but honestly, I don't listen to this very often, and the best way...
It says it in those words.
Yeah.
We should say that on ours, because I don't think we even know our codes how to...
Because almost everybody has email now, right?
And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
or text.
Or text, and there's other ways to reach you, and that are much more efficient, and you can... I mean, I have once in a while I will sit down and try to listen to my voicemails, but they tend to be long, rambling.
I'm sorry about those.
Yeah, and I say, Wendy,
I leave 20-minute emails. I mean, voicemails.
I come to me, yeah.
Do you remember years ago when you would come home from someplace, the first thing you did is you'd go to your answering machine hit it. That was job number one. And now it'll sometimes be, honestly, 4 or 5 or 6 days where I'll go in between and just not even check it at all.
Right, and then when you see like 13 messages, and then you realize that it's like basically solicitations. They've left
a lot of
messages,
or it's silent.
You know how many times Dan Lipinski has called me about something?
Does he call you a lot?
Yeah, it's just a recording.
You think it's a recording? Maybe it's not. Maybe it's really him.
Do you still have a landline at home?
Yeah, I do. And
do you, Bill?
I do.
I cut the ties.
And.
Don't miss it.
Not at all, never?
No, but I will find when I go to doctor's appointments and they kind of go over your information and say, hey, can we still reach you? I'm like, oh, no, I cut the string.
Long gone.
Yeah, so, we've been trying to call you for months.
Right.
Yeah. We've got some news for you. That's the hardest part is going in and changing your phone number for like your iPass stuff, for everything.
Yeah. Right. But it does seem like the only calls that we get anymore are calls from our solicitations. So I'm going to do it. I'll report back. I think Johanna doesn't want to do it. She talks to her mother on the because it's a little louder, a little bit clearer, a little bit more reliable.
Yeah.
Landline, but
I guess
if I have a call that I know is going to last more than 4 minutes or 5 minutes, mm-hmm. I always go landline for several reasons. There's no dropout, and also I'm still convinced that I'm not usually into conspiracy theories. But there's something in the phone that's messing with our heads. I really do.
Bill.
I really do.
If you use the earbuds, then the phone's not by your head.
Well, in my car, I've got it hooked up to Bluetooth.
Right.
But if I'm like, a lot of times I'll get a call if I'm walking to the train or something like that. Somebody will call me and I'm like, I know this is going to be a long phone call. I'm going to wait until I get home and call them when I get home. Just because I don't want my head that close to the cell phone for 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, I don't even like to talk holding it to my head, even though I don't necessarily think there's anything.
They just did a study, and we can talk about this on the stream so we don't take away all of Eric's time. Mm-hmm. But these young girls did an experiment and put these seeds on a wet pad next to a router and away from a router. And the seeds near the router that was emitting the same kind of frequency that you get from a cell phone, they didn't grow at all.
Really?
And the other ones grew. I'll find it. We can discuss it on the feed.
Next on InfoWars, I'll continue with my best reads of the month. This is a spelling bee situation.
Oh.
And the guy says, your word is hors d'oeuvre. The guy says, can you use it in a sentence? And the guy says, yes. I bet this kid can't spell hors d'oeuvre. Overheard, : why is that woman listening to our conversation? She overheard it.
That one is too much thinking.
Hors d'oeuvre.
Here we go. Next.
Can I try spelling hors d'oeuvre, by the way?
Sure, go ahead.
HORS'DOUVERS.
Close. It's HORS space D apostrophe OEUVRE. I did that from memory.
Very nice, sir.
I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times I've visited Chernobyl. It's 14.
Boy, Chernobyl humor is really popular.
Never goes out of style.
Never gets old.
Always funny.
Never gets old.
Right.
Very timely text.
Laughter is the best medicine. Unless you have herpes. Laugh all you want. You still have herpes.
That's sad.
It's very sad. Very sad. And the last one. please call me Maurice. Only my mother calls me the gangster of love.
There's somebody who keeps tweeting Steve Miller Band stuff, because you've had it before, which has been really funny. But there must be one person.
Maybe there's somebody. Yeah, I have a weakness for Steve.
Oh, maybe.
Steve
Do Miller one more Chernobyl one. I love the Chernobyl one.
That's the only Chernobyl one I have.
Oh, man. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then more with Eric Zorn. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bump, bump, bump. It's, another one bites the dust. That's what I thought this was for a minute.
No, it's different.
Rip off.
Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is here. If you're tuning in for any Chernobyl humor, you've already missed it, but it's still on the podcast. You can catch it there. Eric, the demise of DNA Info took place here in town.
About
a week ago.
Very sad, very sudden. It was actually Thursday night, and right around 5 o'clock, an email went around to all the employees. And DNA Info, for those who don't know, it was a hyper-local news organization that covered Chicago neighborhoods, and I think some suburban neighborhoods too, mm-hmm. right? It was online service. It was funded and owned by Joe Ricketts, who's mm-hmm. the patriarch of the Chicago Cubs, the family that owns the Cubs. And it was a great local news source.
It was, wasn't
and,
it?
I always
thought
loved
it was good.
It.
Yeah.
And they shut it down really precipitously. I think something like 110 journalists from the various cities where it operates, I think it operates in about four cities, were all suddenly out of a job. And I used to tell a story where one day my daughter came home from Lane Tech, and she said, they just told the students that our principal is leaving to go to a suburban school. And I was like, oh, that's kind of big news. Lane Tech is a huge school, really important school in the Chicago, system. And this is, I knew that the principal was a young guy who was real promising. I thought, well, this is a story maybe for, I said, I'm going to call the news desk and, give him a hot tip. Students just found out about it, and I wanted to find out whether his first name was Chris or Christopher. So I Google his name online. First thing that pops up is this story by Patty Wetley of DNA Info, who had a 600-word story already online.
Wow.
Explaining, interviewing him, talking with a quote from the district where he's going and
wow.
all about his history. And it was just like one of those things where they were all over stories like
yeah,
that.
They were.
It was like, wow. And this happened a lot. They were really good on local stuff, and it's the important – and one of the reasons why it's really sad that this is going away is that as I've said in the column I wrote about, they shone spotlights into corners that big media just doesn't look into, and often in those places is the sort of primordial matter for much bigger stories, much bigger scandals, and so that's a really important part of the news ecosystem, are these smaller outlets mm-hmm. that are covering these smaller stories and doing this routine coverage of boards and commissions mm-hmm. and little scandals in neighborhoods, and the patterns begin to emerge, and out of those come the bigger stories. When you take that away, it's taking away a certain amount of oxygen. It's almost like, I hate to use this analogy because it sounds insulting, but it's kind of like certain insects dying. And you think, well, how important is that? But it's
a grand
scheme of things. And again, it was really good stuff. The problem was that they weren't making any money. It's online only by the end. And it didn't seem to be making any money. I don't think anybody thought it was making money. And then there was a vote in New York a week ago with the DNA Info New York. And they voted to unionize, to join the Writers Guild, I believe it was. And one week later is when Ricketts pulled the plug.
So
it's not
more expensive. If they go union, it becomes a much harder thing to pay out on, right?
Ostensibly it would, yes. They would go
have
on strike.
They would have to
pay more. And there's a lot of talk that Joe Ricketts is a real villain here, that they unionize and he shuts the whole thing down. And I've been in an anti-union fit. There's little question that he's anti-union. On the other hand, I don't think he was making any money. I think that
just a stopgap.
He'd been operating this since 2009 in New York, 2012 in Chicago, and there's a sense that he was losing money, and so I don't know how much longer it would have gone on. The fact that he linked it so obviously to the union closing makes him really look like the villain in an
old man Potter
movie. It makes him look like that. I don't know that you can expect someone just to keep losing money if his goal is to make money. My argument then that I made is that is that things like this are too important just to let go or to hold hostage to the profit making
right.
Demands so that it ought to be something that we consider to be as important to our city, to our civic culture as a symphony, as a college,
yeah.
as museums, as the opera, as all kinds of things that people donate money to
yeah.
that philanthropists support, that you could have something like this. I mean, you know, they had what I think about 20 people in Chicago. I'll bet you $1 million or $2 million a year could probably fund something like that.
Probably.
And that's what the Ricketts pay that for for a utility infielder. I mean, seriously.
Right,
this
know.
Is the kind of and this kind of thing really makes a difference in Chicago, and it sustains some excellent journalists. I
yeah.
know some of them there are really good, but
yeah.
but it also is important to people who never it's important to people who never even read it. I mean, if you never even looked at DNA info, it was keeping an eye
yeah.
on things that you were not keeping an eye on.
So who picks
really
up
important.
The slack? If they're gone, who
well,
picks up
there
the slack?
There is the booster papers and the booster chain, and there's some of that. But I think it actually leaves a void in many ways. That
you go ahead. Start something, Eric.
Well, you know, I don't have the money to do it. If somebody wants to give me a lot of money, I'd do it. But
yeah.
I think this is what's going to have to happen. Is someone's going to have to step up. And say, look, we're gonna fund this, and it's gonna be, it's like I say, it's like people give money. How many they give? How many millions of dollars
sure.
did they give to the University of Chicago Business School? Ken Griffin, I think, just gave like tons of money to them, and it's a good thing. I'm glad he's given money there, but for a fraction of that, you could keep a good, strong digital local news source going, and I think that's really important to a society.
So there's an argument that I know you've been in the middle of because you're a journalist, that people have said with the advent of finding stories online, it waters down all other journalism, and it shouldn't, because you want to go with a trusted source, the Tribune, the Sun-Times, I mean, the list goes on and on of your trusted sources, as opposed to just clicking on something at random
right.
and assuming that it's real news just because it's online.
Right. I mean, we have more readers now than we've ever had, but that readership is not a problem because people have their phones with them. They're always
right.
reading stuff. The problem is sustaining it. And, you know, basically, print still sustains the Tribune, print subscribers and print
it
buyers,
does.
And print advertising sustains us.
Because of the coupons.
Because of the coupons, right. And the fabulous columns. I think that's what you meant to say.
Yes.
But, you know, but we're all, you know, everybody in media, everybody in print or in, you know, information kind of stuff is struggling like that. We're trying to figure this out. I mean, I think radio is too in some ways. It's like there's all these different demands on our advertisers, demands on our audience's time. And there's certain things that I think are too important to lose. And this is one of them that's too important to lose.
Do colleges address this if you're a journalism student and you're going to college for that? Do they even address the fact that the writing skills are very, very important, but there's also the economics end of being a writer or a journalist right now, which are tougher, right? I mean, you knew when you were going to school that there would be plenty of avenues to be paid to do what you do, but does a kid today who's studying that in college know that that's the case?
I don't know that they actually get up and discourage them. I mean, they're coming in and
but they have to explain that it's changed since.
Oh,
you know,
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they talk about it. I don't know. I haven't.
And you
been
have to be a good
college.
Writer, such as yourself, or you wouldn't be employed. There aren't as many jobs
right.
these
and,
days.
And as we've seen from people who've left the Tribune, there are a lot of jobs where writing skill and communication skill are really important. The kind of things that they teach in journalism
mm-hmm.
schools. So we've had a lot of my former colleagues have gone on to other jobs where their writing skills, their information gathering skills are really important. These are not trivial skills, and they're not skills that are so common that they're not
sure.
marketable.
Right.
It's just that, you know, writing for a newspaper. My daughter was the managing editor of her high school paper at Lane. She's the editor of her college paper now, and I'm like, please, honey, don't get into print
Find
journalism.
Else.
Whatever you do,
wow.
you know, she's studying architecture, so I'm hoping.
Isn't that awful
that.
Though that you would try to talk her out of something that you?
I
done.
Don't think she's serious. I mean, I think no. she enjoys it, but she's not. She hasn't come to me with that. We'll have that talk when you'll sit down
All
and say,
right,
honey,
good.
I know you want to be just like your old man, but
join the circus.
But
this is much more solid.
You know, like now people getting into radio in their curriculum, there aren't as many radio positions as before, but now there's podcasting. So what is it that, like, just writing online for
well,
people
I
now?
I mean, I think there are, like I said, there's a huge appetite out there for all kinds of writing, communications,
right.
talent skills. People in audio, you know, my wife is part of the Third Coast International Audio Festival. They're having their big convention next weekend.
Yeah.
There's all this talent's coming in, all these podcasts that they've been having this podcast festival going on, and they're selling out local podcast events and so on. So there's a lot of stuff going on in audio, a lot of stuff going on. So that if you say, I want to be like an FM disc jockey, you know, maybe there's going to be fewer, you know, opportunities there, but there's all kinds of other opportunities.
The satellite, though, they have shows of just playing music.
Right, a little bit of everything. That's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate
it. See you next week.
We'll check in with Steve and find out what's coming up on the Winchester Business Lunch next. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.